It's not science or spiritual. It's both. This is the Yoakum Strength Podcast with me, your host, Austin Yoakum. And on this episode of the podcast, we have Dr. Tyler Pansner. Tyler has his PhD in molecular and cellular pharmacology and is an expert in all things genetic, biohacking, and cognitive enhancement. On this episode of the podcast, Tyler takes us down the rabbit holes of out-training our genetics, how we can improve our ability to learn skills with psychedelics, and how to balance double-blind studies with the N of one that is right in front of you. This is one of my favorite podcasts I have done in a long, long time. Tyler came with energy and way more information than I ever thought possible. Prepare to have your minds melted. Thank you guys for listening. Keep chopping wood.
Before we hit the intro music, I wanted to introduce to you guys the Yoakum Strength Insider. The Yoakum Strength Insider is our online training platform that takes all of the ideas that we talk about on this podcast and implements them into a program that is available to you at the touch of your fingers. Our goal with the Yoakum Strength Insider is to create better movers, to level up your life, and to move forward from where you are. We do this in a holistic fashion. Not only will you receive a program that has helped hundreds of people become better movers, you'll also receive access to our app that allows you to track everything, has video links for all exercises, and allows you to be in constant communication with a Yoakum Strength coach. Along with this, you'll get our 30-page PDF nutrition and lifestyle guidelines that includes everything from what to eat, how much of it to eat, why we're eating it, meditation habits, and other lifestyle habits that we implement with our clients to really level up their lives. If you're interested in trying out one of these programs, use podcast25 in the discount section right before you pay for 25% off your first program.
Boom. This is the Yoakum Strength Podcast. Take the leap down the rabbit hole with us as we interview elite level guests to unravel what high performance really is.
All right, well, Tyler, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me, my man.
Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you kind of got into this whole world of genetics, epigenetics, and the wild, wild world of the brain that you're in and body that you're in?
Yeah, absolutely. So always interested in cells. I got my bachelor's at University of South Florida in cellular molecular biology. And I went right from there to get my PhD in molecular and cellular pharmacology at Stony Brook University up in Long Island, New York. So pharmacology is the study of how drugs and substances affect cells. So I'm an expert in not only how cells behave and function and are able to do their daily functions as is, not only in the healthy body, but in a disease state, but also an expert on how external things, drugs, supplements, vitamins, minerals, environmental stressors will alter that cell biology. And I did my PhD, studied all the different cell types in the brain for the first half, neuropharmacology, how drug substances affect mood, cognition, behavior, consciousness, was my initial interest, still one of my biggest interests. And my thesis work studied breast cancer metastasis, how it can hijack the immune system. And when 23andMe started really becoming a thing, I got it done and I was like, let me figure out, go a little deeper. Some of their reports were pretty basic. If your pee smells like asparagus, you know, which is to me isn't, I didn't pay the money just for that. I want to really know, dive deeper. So I figured out that I break down adrenaline slower than normal. I'm sensitive to histamine, and I was able to remedy a lot of my lifelong health issues through natural supplementation. So that was the birth of what I'm now calling holistic genetic health optimization, which is utilizing the technology and the knowledge from conventional medicine, from genetics, but applying that in a holistic context. So see what your cells have a higher genetic need for, give them those specific nutrients, and any pathways that are overactive, suppress them utilizing targeted natural supplements, natural remedies. And I firmly believe, I've done this with plenty of clients. I left the corporate world of personalized genetics with cancer because I don't want to just help fix cancer once it's there. I want to optimize your cells now, so you're happier now, healthier now, thriving today, so your cells will be more balanced and less prone to disease formation later at the road.
One of the things that you posted about was the three things that kind of make you go are exercise, sun, and psychedelics. And I would kind of like to start there. Like, why are those the three things that kind of make you go? Like, where have you got to in a point in life where you know those three things are kind of your fuel sources and really get you up in the morning?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's one of those things that, as I love learning things and then reflecting back and being like, oh, that explained that, why that was good or bad for me in the past. So I've always loved the sun, always loved the beach, always been really big into weightlifting, played football, been basically doing bodybuilding for, I don't know, probably 15 years at this point. And turns out I feel good doing those things because they raise something called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and psychedelics do as well. And that's what basically lets your brain grow new brain cells, grow new ones, strengthen existing ones, and kind of rewire your brain and be more malleable or adaptable to change through a process called neuroplasticity. So I have a mutation there that makes me produce less of it. And when I was connecting the dots, BDNF during development is responsible for fine motor learning, fine motor control. And just looking at the patterns here, I've always been a big guy, played basketball and stuff, but I was never the best athlete, if you will, like the fine motor skills. High, you know, I was a lineman in football. You know, it's a big body that you knew how to like roughen people up and stuff like that. And pretty clumsy. So it's one of those things that was very interesting to me that as I started to experiment with psychedelics, kind of revisiting that. I remember I was playing beer pong with some friend. This was, you know, you played a bunch in college. I didn't play beer pong for I don't know how many years. Then you kind of circle back around like, oh, let's do this again. That's kind of fun. Why not? And I was so much better, like light years better. And then I started beating some of my friends that were more athletic than me in high school. Like they were known as the athletes. I was known as, you know, clumsy Tyler. That's the lineman. And, you know, beating them in like games at the beach, like spike ball and stuff. And these little like athletic things that normally I would suck at and get crushed by these people, and more like fine motor learning basically. So I have this theory that you know, the hard weight training, the sunlight, psychedelics elevated BDNF, which is able to support the development of my fine motor learning skills to get better at some of these high eye hand coordination type things, based on boosting up my BDNF. Now having this mutation means that my levels are genetically lower than normal at baseline. So that doesn't really mean that they will always be low. Clearly, you can do things to boost them up. But it's one of those things, looking back, all those things skyrocket BDNF, some of the best things you could do for BDNF. And I think all these biohacks that people do, I think saunas, cold plunge, fasting, well, actually, I know this, it's been shown in the literature, they all raise BDNF. So it's kind of like, pick your poison, not your poison, I guess. Pick your, you know, healing, you know, pick what modality you want to do to raise BDNF. And I think that's one of the main underlying molecules that you want to keep high to live a long, healthy, joyous life. Like lower levels of BDNF means lower brain adaptability. That's directly linked to neurodegeneration, because if you're not growing new brain cells, strengthening existing ones, then they can eventually atrophy, kind of like a muscle. You use it or lose it.
That boom. Okay. That's a beautiful start to the podcast. That's fucking awesome. Very similar background story as you, coming out of high school, big guy, offensive line, like could crush weights left and right and could crush people in front, but could not do the hand-eye coordination. And a year out of college, I really, really got addicted to how do people have that hand-eye coordination? Like how do people pick up skills like that? I was like looking at athletes that didn't work nearly as hard as me. And I was like, they're able to pick up skills like this and like just see things slower. And I was like, man, I feel like such a klutz in everything that I do. And if I'm trying to do what they do, like I'm so much slower at picking up those skills. And I went down the whole pathway of like, how can I become a like addict of skill acquisition? I like to talk about that, like with my athletes, how to become addicts of skill acquisition and the whole neuroplasticity route and the whole playing creative route to really, again, it's creating those new neural pathways to be able to learn something. And I've noticed the same exact thing. And I didn't even recognize it for a little bit until like I really go back and look at my old like athletic ability. It was like grinding all the time doing the weights. And I was like, such a naff. And now I can go and pick up pretty much any game and compete with anybody in these fine motor skills. And it it's such a crazy transition to just kind of watch yourself transform and using some of these things. And so you were saying that the weights, you felt like the weights helped you move forward in that kind of, in the skill acquisition and then the hand-eye coordination aspect. I felt like I had crushed the weight aspect so much, and I kind of just took a step out and went more into the play and creative aspect. And that was what allowed me to kind of pick up some of these like skills, like learn skills faster. And like you said, it's kind of like that muscle, like learn the skills faster. Like why do you think that the difference is there, that you felt like the weights helped you? And if, for me, it felt like I had spent too much time on the weights. I almost needed to take that step out and go into more of that creative play aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily primarily the weights for me. Mm-hmm. I also started supplementing with magnesium. I have a higher genetic need for it. So the transporter that absorbs magnesium through your gut, you know, you eat food or supplement, that doesn't work as well for me. So mm-hmm. I'm not able to absorb as much magnesium. So I need higher levels of magnesium. What does magnesium do? It actually blocks the NMDA receptor, and that raises BDNF. So it helps slow down your brain, slow down excessive brain firing, and raises BDNF. That's why it's been shown to help with depression. And that's why a lot of people that are magnesium deficient are often depressed, because that raises BDNF. In addition to that, I have some mutations in the endocannabinoid system. So I break down endocannabinoids for everyone listening. It's our own body's version of THC. We didn't evolve to get stoned on marijuana just for shits and giggles. Like, we have our own version of THC called anandamide, and that basically does what THC does in our body. It binds the same receptors, obviously just much weaker, but like a runner's high is actually that anandamide binding the same receptor in your brain that THC binds to. So technically, you're microdosing on marijuana, if you will, molecularly, when you have a runner's high. Long story short, I break those down quicker than normal, and CBD blocks those. So it kind of is exactly what I need to raise my endocannabinoids. I'm a big fan of cannabis as well, but CBD specifically, that's also been shown to raise BDNF and grow brain cells. So in addition to the psychedelics and the weight training, sunlight, all that stuff, I think also, I probably mainly attribute it to the psychedelics and the magnesium and CBD. You know, I do far, very far from doing psychedelics every day. You know, I've never been really a microdose type of guy. I prefer to do macro dose, you know, every couple of months or whatever. But taking the magnesium and CBD every single day not only really helped with my anxiety and just my cognition, but again, the skill acquisition and that aspect there. So I've always had this idea that stacking things that promote neuroplasticity, think about if you were training an athlete, like to be a quarterback or to throw prop, to learn these new movement patterns. I mean, I'm sure that'd be a similar benefit that we've seen with ourselves, getting that more fine motor learning skills. If you're trying to learn anything, you want to try to boost neuroplasticity during/after that, so you could properly consolidate those memories and incorporate that into, you know, your subconscious or whatever you call it.
Yeah, this is fucking good. And this is the point that I really wanted to get to with you, was like the point of like, can you outtrain your genetics? You know, like how do you outtrain your genetics? Are you kind of stuck in this skill? Cause and this is something that I've really been on the journey, cause I was stuck in the thought process for the longest time of like, I can't, like, I'm just not a guy that can move that way. I'm not just a guy. And naturally, like genetically, probably not naturally, I'm probably a guy that is just needs to go lift weight, like is going to be better at lifting weights and moving humans and doing that. But I was like, I really had this itch to go and do that. But I was stuck in my head of like, genetically, I'm not able to do that. And then, but genetically, you're predisposed to not being able to do that, maybe. But again, it's like, okay, knowing that, what do you do with that information? And then how do you approach some of these things? So like microdosing, that has been something, microdosing psilocybin has been something that has been insane for me, for being able to pick
up. So interesting, because it makes me feel kind of lethargic and off, which is like, it's so interesting that like, they benefit me. It's just so interesting. Everyone's so different. You know, like some people literally within the first hour of microdosing, all of those negative thoughts that have plagued them their entire life are just boom, gone, you know, just completely washed away. And you have someone like me that enjoys psychedelics, but the microdose of that, you know, just super interesting, but sorry to interrupt.
No. That's good, because I was going to say the same thing about CBD. Like I microdose and it, like, I was the same thing, like hyper reactive to it. I took it. I was like, what in the fuck? Like it was like 100 milligrams the first time I took it. And it was like, basically like everything it said, basically like you won't really feel anything but a caffeine like buzz like that. And I was like, I took it. I was like, what in the world? Like, this is a totally different world. But I took CBD And I've never felt more anxious in my entire life. Like, I
feel interesting. Do you know if any THC in it? Because some of them can have trace amounts of THC.
It might have trace like something like that. But like, I respond well to THC. Like that was weird for me because I had taking edibles or something like that with THC, I respond well to. I'm not anxious at all. I feel like just elevated, especially if I'm not microdosed. But you know what I mean, like not getting.
Do you like Delta 8 THC?
Yes. Yeah. Delta 8. Yep.
Delta 8 is the fucking shit. I think it's so much better than Delta 9 overall as a molecule. Like personally, like, I mean, I still smoke regular cannabis, but like, I wish that there was a way to, well, you can technically smoke, like people will say, oh, like I found Delta 8 THC flower at the smoke shop. And it's like Delta 8 THC is a molecule. All they did was they took hemp, which is legal to grow, and they just sprayed it with Delta 8 THC oil. So like, you know, you still get the effects of it, but like, there's no Delta 8 THC like plant, you know what I mean? And for you guys listening, it's basically one molecular change in the THC molecule. It's naturally present in hemp and the cannabis plant. But that tiny molecular change makes it far less anxious. Imagine all the side effects people talk about: anxiety, paranoia, you know, negative thoughts, racing heart. All of those are dramatically, drastically lowered. And so you're able to capitalize on more of the benefits. Like, you know, like a regular edible, Delta 9 edible, like you take it 2 hours in, you're like, got to go to bed for 12 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
or
your brain shuts off and you're just drooling in front of a TV versus the Delta 8. Like, I've always been a end of the day. That's when I dose up. I've never been a wake and bake type of guy. Like, it kind of just didn't really work for me like that. I get kind of late. I could do creative stuff, but like, you know, executive type stuff, grinding out work, like, no, I'll say just wait for another day. But like, even the Delta 8, I could actually get some work done on that. And you could, I always give the analogy of, you know, if you're really into edibles, you know, when you get too stoned and like, if someone calls your phone, you can't pick up the phone, or you can't be public. Like, all those types of feelings are dramatically reduced overall. And it's really, really fascinating. Like, just really, I like it a lot better. Like, having a little nibble of it, like microdosing that, if I'm going out drinking, I'd much rather drink like a third of the amount of drinks and just have like a little nibble of that, like in the background, you know. Like, I drink to get drunk, but I have supplements. I'm working actually on a one pill serving size anti-hangover pill, all plant-based, that works like a fucking, it works so good. So I supplement my body when I put that in my body. But, you know, I think a lot of people in the holistic space too, it's, you get so far in that rabbit hole and it's like, you have to do everything perfect all the time. You know, like if I'm going to have a cheat meal, something out with the wife, whatever, and there's canola oil in it, you know, I don't bat an eye. But like, when I'm during my week, I'm like 95% of the time totally dialed in. You know, it's like, at the end of the day, you got to pick your poison, let it slowly kill you. Cause at the end of the day, we can only optimize so much. It's all about pros versus cons.
Well, and that was something that I really wanted to talk to you about, because it's like, and just to clear it up for everybody, it's like, we're not just talking to some stoner party, like your doctor, like massive, just go to his page, just massive amounts of knowledge. Like that's just like, you go on the page and it's like all of these specific things that you have in your brain. And what I was thinking about is like these athletes and these people. And like I just got off a consult with a guy that's pretty hyper fixated on his body, like is almost to the point where like he's like stuck in his body. He's unable to do anything. It's like 5G, Wi-Fi, bad food, canola oil, and he's like, he's unable to do anything. And honestly, it's like the stress over these things is killing him more than these things.
Exactly. 100%. I see that a lot of the time. And it's like, when I'm working with clients and I'm looking at the genes, and it's, you know, you may do better on low histamine foods and low oxalate foods. And I try to really preface it by, do not go crazy off the deep end. Cause you know, they may seem calm, cool, collected in the consult call, then hang up and start losing their shit, you know, and they're all afraid of foods and stuff. And it's, I try to tell them, look at a couple articles, you know, BuzzFeed articles, high histamine foods. If you see the top 10 high histamine foods and like three of them you eat every day, just eat them a little bit less, you know, like and a lot of people are just so, because there's so much contradictory information out there. You have the carnivore crew, the keto crew, the pro-metabolic high carb crew, and it's just all of them at the same time saying that their diet's the best for everyone. I'm here to say that's not true at all. It all depends on your unique biology. And what makes your biology unique? Your genetics.
And that was the thing that I went to your webpage and I fucking loved. You were talking about like how all these doctors, and the diet part is part of it too, and the exercise is part of it too. It's like, everybody's just kind of throwing like darts at a dartboard blind is yep. what you said. And yep. it's like, they're just chucking them at a dartboard. And it's like this huge, like you said, the blanket statements. It's like carnivore diet for everybody, vegan diet for everybody, SSRIs for everybody. You know, it's like yep. one answer for everybody. It's like, it's not dealing with any of the nuance, like what, especially in like the medical world. Like, and this is something like when you were listing out a lot of the things, like Mike, why is this not more looked into? Like, why are we not looking into this at all? Like, why is it all like just this blanket statement? Like, if you have depression, you're getting SSRIs. And like, one of the things you said, it was like, there's somebody who's like, maybe they're just B6 deficient, you know? It's like, and now, so now you're like, the SSRI is not giving you any positive, and you're getting all the negatives of it. And yep. you're not fixing any of the problem. And the big thing that you talked about is like going to the root and like stop throwing like band-aids on it afterwards. Like, why is this not? And especially like the price of it, it's like, it's not a crazy price. Like, I was looking at all the prices and everything that you're talking about. Like, it's not this massive, like $3 million. You have to go like $1,000 to be able to get all of this stuff done and start yeah. throwing darts just a little bit more precisely in what you're doing rather than just randomly throwing things into your body.
No, absolutely. And I think a big factor is just simply that it's not covered by insurance. Cause you know, for the value you're getting, $1,000, you're going to save tens of thousands of dollars on all these stupid supplements down the road. You know, most of my clients are like, I have a cabinet full of $5,000 of supplements over the past 5 years. I have no idea what's doing what. And usually half of the stuff they're taking is making them worse. But I think a lot of it comes down to just not being able to have it covered by insurance. And it's also you also have people that are saying genetics aren't there. You have a lot of doctors or nutritionists on Instagram that just bash it and say it's all BS, because the problem is there's also a lot of people that are doing the genetics very minimalistically and just trying to price gouge people. So they give people like me a bad name. So it can be off-putting to people, and just thinking that it could be that easy. Like, I'm not going to lie, as I see more and more clients, it's like, I keep getting these amazing results. And from my point of view, of course, but it's just like, is it really this easy, if that makes sense? Obviously, me knowing what I know, that's me saying that. But, you know, it's just like, is it really up? Yep, this, that. And most of my clients, we go through this and their jaws are just dropped. And they're just like, this is me. Oh my, every single thing. It's like, oh my God, yes. Oh my God, yes. Oh my God, yes. And, you know, it's not a coincidence. But yeah, why is it not being implemented more? I'm still not exactly sure why. I haven't encountered many people thinking from this line of thinking. You know, I think part of it honestly could be from the psychedelics and the creativity and the cannabis for me personally, because people will bash cannabis, but me personally, I do well with it. I don't abuse it, but the creativity you get. You ever hear about the double helix model of DNA, like how it's a double spiral? Yep. Like, that was literally thought up on an acid trip, high dose acid trip. The PCR machine, polymerase chain reaction, that they use for all the molecular diagnostics for the COVID test, the PCR tests, that concept was thought up on an acid trip. So it's like, if I'm under a mental state that a fraction of people with my education have been under, what type of thoughts will come to my head? What connections am I going to make in that altered state? So yeah, it's super frustrating to see that we're still so far away, but I do think people are starting to wake up to this stuff, and people are starting to realize, especially after the whole pandemic BS, like, I think the overall trust in conventional medicine is just keeps going down. That being said, I'll never be that guy. I came from conventional medicine. You know, we need them for medications. I think we do. Certain people can be good on SSRIs for a couple of months while they're stabilized, because that's going to work for a short period of time. And like, even if everyone ate perfectly, supplemented perfectly, exercised, people are still going to get cancer. And I'm a cancer biologist by training, and everyone's cancer is so incredibly diverse. Like, one tumor can have like 10 different subpopulations of cells, each of them genetically different. So you hear people going to Mexico, how they cure their cancer doing high dose, mega dose THC oil in Mexico. I don't doubt that for a second, but that means their cancer cells were involved with that sort of mechanism that sensitized them to it. That may not work for somebody else. And like, I see people, you know, saying go keto if you have cancer. There are some studies showing that ketogenic diets can help sensitize cancer cells to radiation, but do your cancer cells have that type of mutations with theirs? So it's very hard because in the holistic space on social media, at least people I follow, it's just very to the uneducated person trying to weave between someone like me and someone that's just confident and just saying a bunch of BS they don't really know. It can be sort of hard to tell within one reel. But then if you were to listen to more longer form content by me, I map out the entire thought process for things I'm thinking. And it's like, you know, there's no way I'm making this shit up. You know, like, yeah, like I know what I'm talking about, but it's very hard for someone from the outside to come in. People will come to me like, I don't know. Can I even have honey in my coffee? Can this, that? And I'm like, the honey isn't, that's not ruining you. That little bit of honey in the morning, you know, you got to get your steps in this or that. Am I overtraining? Am I undertraining? All these types of things. So it's really a big clusterfuck for people that aren't that educated, trying to do the right thing, where it's everyone saying, buy my code, use this, blah, blah, blah. I still feel weird telling people to use my code to buy stuff because it just seems, not that it seems cheesy, but it's just like, it doesn't feel like natural, I guess, to me. But at the same point, I have people that DM me, oh my God, I took your recommendation and like, it completely fixed my gut. All my bloating's gone. My SIBO's better, this or that. So I latch onto that and I'm like, okay, I'm helping people with this. So like, I need to be more vocal about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The double helix thing is fucking hilarious because I was literally going to quote you on a podcast I listened to this morning. And they were talking about how it was Eric Weinstein. I think it was Eric Weinstein that was talking about it, but he was like, he's like, there's all these good doctors. And he's like, basically you cannot become a great doctor. You can sit and be this good doctor and this like average doctor and just basically follow everything by the book, but you can never be the great doctor without being a quack, is what he was saying. And it's like, without experimenting.
I haven't heard that before. I actually fucking love that. That's so fucking true. Could not agree more with that.
And I think the same thing in like every profession too, because everything like I experiment in our profession is like, you know, this dude's out. It's like, but it's almost like you have to, like, you almost have to take this outside approach to get that exponential growth or that next step approach to everything.
Well, it's innovation. Exactly. I mean, look at someone like Elon Musk, you know what I mean? Like, it's that type of thinking, the outside of the box thinking. And it's like, you know, there have been times I have this hypothesis about what may be working for somebody and I make a recommendation and they don't respond well. That has happened a few times. Like, oh my God, I woke up really out of it. And I'm like, don't worry, tomorrow you'll be better. There's still a little, it takes like 2 days or a little out of it. This has maybe happened. I could count on one hand how many times this happened. You know, it's rare, but it does happen. And like, you know, I'd much rather all the progress I make with people, that's the cost of trying to be truly innovative with these things. And that's what I tell my clients when I work with them. I'm like, hey, just so you know, at the end of the day, I may use something that's never been used for this type of ailment or indication before. There's no data on it because I look at the molecular pathways and I'm drawing parallels and inferencing things based on the data that I'm looking at. And like, I'm the type of, like, the evidence-based community is so rigid with things. Show me the randomized clinical trial. I'm decades ahead where current science is at. I don't have time to wait. And honestly, it's fucking boring as shit. Just, I could never imagine just sticking to the book, reading this study, it shows this is good, so that's good for everybody. Like, it's just so boring and mundane to me. That's not how my brain works.
Okay, so that was something I wanted to ask you about too, is that experimental process. How are you balancing like the science and the big studies with the fact that a lot of this is N of one? And you know, like, you can have all of these studies, like you can have all these studies say something and it not work for the client. And really, that's all that matters. Like, if the person in front of you is suffering from cancer, you can have all of these studies say something, but if it's not working for the N of one, the person that has cancer, like, what are you doing there? You know, like, why are we not experimenting with this? Because it is the N of one. So like, how do you balance that approach of N of one, the person straight in front of you, with the like statistically significant double blind studies?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't let the significance or the statistics from a double blind study like really deter me from anything, because I think all of research, clinical research, is inherently flawed in that, let's just say there's 100 people that they're checking to see if a supplement works for depression, let's say, and it'll show no change. And you see the dots all over the map. You'll have a pocket of 20 people or so that it worked better for. And then most of them, it was like, no real change. And then some people maybe got worse. But like, if you take the average of all 100, it shows no change. It's a failure. But it worked for 20 people. Why is that a failure? Why are we just saying this doesn't work? So like, you need to be controlling for all the underlying genetics. Why does it work for some people and not others? Because the mechanisms by which this supplement or drug works is the same mechanism that needs support in the cells based on the genetics, if that makes sense. So it's like, I'm not very big on math and statistics. I'm very big on concepts and showing 15, 20 pieces of indirect data hinting at something. Because then at the end of the day, I try something, they don't feel good on it. Okay, we'll try something, another molecule that has that similar mechanism. And they wasted $30 on something, which in the grand scheme, people come to me wasting $50,000 on all these functional labs and they get nothing out of it.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's like having a bunch of tools. And I think about this in the fitness and like exercise world too, but it's like having a bunch of tools, but not being sworn or like addicted to those tools. And you see this in like the strength conditioning world. It's like they have the tool of like the barbell and they can't see anything else past the barbell. And then you see it in the like the medical world of like they have the tool of the ADHD medication or the SSRIs and they have to give it. But it's like it's just a tool. And I think that's one thing that drew me to your stuff. It's like your goal is to like use the thousands of tools that you have access to and like play with them. And that's the whole point of a tool. That's the whole point of a system. And that's something that I've been working on too. It's like the whole point of a system is to help us make sense of something. Like there's so much data, there's so many things. It's to help us make sense of something. If it's no longer helping you make sense of something and it's trapping you, that the system is no longer, it's not good. And like, but people get stuck in this thought process of like, the system is like this 10 commandment thing set from God that is structured or like is from nature. It's like, no, some human just like you and me created that system to help them. And it's no longer helping you. It's no longer serving its cause. So you don't have to follow it anymore. Like you can just use the other tools that you have or look up other tools or experiment with other tools rather than being stuck in a textbook answer.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you mentioned barbell. I haven't touched the barbell in so many years. Like all my chest workouts now are like one arm. It's the most bitch looking workouts, like unilateral converging machines. But like, that's what makes my best my chest has ever looked. I couldn't even tell you how many times I could barbell bench 225. Like I've couldn't even tell you because it seems so restrictive. And the same thing, you could use that for like a parallel Adderall, like you mentioned, you know what I mean? So there are a lot of parallels with that.
Yeah. So I want to kind of draw this back into, we started off with the skill acquisition world, which I was really hoping we got to, and we hit it hard at the start, but we have an athlete that is looking to, again, become really good at learning these skills and like acquiring these skills. I feel like the way I view athletics, that's the entire point. It's not to get them bigger, faster, stronger. It's to learn a skill faster and learn the skill that they're required to do on the field faster. And maybe it's shoot a basketball, maybe it's make somebody miss, maybe it's learn how to tackle somebody, but like, you have an athlete like this. How are you like kind of approaching the thought process of that skill acquisition and neuroplasticity for the athletes listening? Like what are things that they can do to kind of capitalize on that, the ability to play with their neuroplasticity, their ability to like increase their skill retention and their ability to learn new skills? Like what's kind of your process? Like what would it be, I guess, if you're working with an athlete that is their goal?
Yeah. So couple different ways that I've worked with athletes. So like one of them would be like to increase like stamina or, you know, like blood flow, but you're talking about the actual motor learning side of things. So things that raise BDNF, I think could be very beneficial. You know, there's magnesium, CBD, we mentioned lion's mane mushroom. Those are some that are potent, totally legal, you know, non-psychoactive at all. And I think it's also depending on the type of movement, I think making sure that you're supporting proper, like at least for me, I come from more of the bodybuilding hypertrophy training side, and that's all about muscular contractions. So if someone has mutations like choline, acetylcholine, people think of it from learning to memory, that's actually also used to stimulate muscle contractions. So like, you know, at the end of a workout, your muscles just can't really flex anymore. You like burnt out all the acetylcholine. So that's why people I actually started doing this when I made my pre-workout years ago. I was putting choline stuff in there. I think before anyone else was really doing that. I wish an alternate universe I would have went down the supplement, you know, a different version of me went down that route and done that, because I think it would have been really cool. But in that context, making sure that they have enough acetylcholine to contract the muscles properly, making sure they have enough nitric oxide to get enough blood flow there. The acetylcholine will also help with the focus. So you can actually be attentive and locked into that. Are you attentively, or if it's just, I don't know, running a route for football or something like that, maybe not as like muscular contractile focused. Are you actually focused? Do you have brain fog? Are you histamine sensitive? Then you eat a bunch of high histamine foods right before then. So you're just kind of out of it going through the motions. You're doing the drill just to do the drill, or are you really focusing? So doing things to help raise BDNF or neuroplasticity, awesome. But I think also making sure there's not significant inflammation. And as an athlete, neuroinflammation normally coincides with systemic inflammation. So like, it's sort of rare to have only brain inflammation, especially if you're an athlete. You know, make sure the joints, like make sure the inflammation is low throughout the body, make sure the gut health is good. That should carry over to a clear state of cognition. So even before boosting this neuroplasticity, you're actually intentionally listening to these things and paying attention to your body.
That's good. How would you recommend, like, somebody, this is what, like, I know I have athletes that they would have no idea. Like, it's like they've lived in brain fog so long that they don't even know they're in brain fog. Like, is there something for them almost like check or be like, oh shit, that's me type thing, to where like,
One of the things I did initially by accident, I hurt my knee or something. And after the gym, when I went to lab during my PhD, I had coffee and I was like, I'm still so tired. Like, I had a great workout, my knee hurts, whatever. So I took like 2 ibuprofen, and this was like an hour after I had the coffee, and I suddenly started getting so like stimmed up and just like, I felt so much better. And that was a big aha moment for me, because you don't need a PhD to realize if you take an anti-inflammatory and you feel better, you're inflamed. Now the hard question is, what's making you inflamed? For me at lab, I was allergic to peas and almonds. I ate them every day for lunch at lab, and I was allergic to mice. I worked with them in my lab. So I'd come from the gym feeling so great, go into lab and be spiking my histamine. That coffee I drank, spiking my brain histamine. So, you know, obviously not a long-term thing. Don't be popping, you know, NSAIDs, Tylenol, ibuprofen, whatever, like forever. But if you're really feeling down, try taking 400 milligrams of ibuprofen and pay attention, be mindful and see how you feel. And it's not just for knee pain. I was also taking curcumin mixed with bioperine. Really good anti-inflammatory. I used to feel so much better. This is before I realized I was sensitive to histamine. So I was living with high histamine all the time. I had this weird feeling in my eyes that just felt kind of off. Couldn't really finish thoughts very fluidly and wouldn't just feel very like electrified like myself. I'm a very like electric personality, you know, I'm very like outgoing, high energy. Yeah, taking that made me realize that. And then I started going down the rabbit hole. Then I ended up going to get allergy tested. And then I was like, oh, crap, I'm allergic to everything a little bit, severely to those three I mentioned. And then I started looking at the gene that breaks down histamine. And then I looked at my 23andMe report. And then what do you know? I have a mutation, so I break it down slowly. So that was one of the first dots I connected there. And then when I work with clients now, we're not talking about these mutations that I work with clients to support. They're not 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000,000 people. Like 40% of people have these mutations. The majority of my clients have a lot of similar mutations. Like, we're not all 100% genetically unique. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's why I'm trying to plan some sort of personalized yet group coaching, because some of these client calls I'm having, it's like, I don't know, 60%, 70% of similar mutations there. And yes, there's a little nuance. Maybe we use this for you, maybe that for that person, but being able to condense that. So, you know, I really do miss reading more. I haven't learned that much lately because I've just been seeing so many clients, all these one-on-ones over and over and over and over again. Don't get me wrong, I love doing it. Mm-hmm. But if there's a way to kind of compact that and have people sit there and be like, okay, this gene mutation I don't have, but I'll just chill for a little bit, you know, and then they're re-engaged for the next one. People could always be learning and free up time. Like, the PhD was great, sucked in a lot of ways, but also great because I would just sit there and just have to learn. You know, I really like love learning new things, connecting these dots, like being able to just sit there and read. All right, let me read about, I don't know, the genetics of heavy metal detoxification, you know, and just take a couple of hours to read that, get to the end of the literature, like where the knowledge ends, because these types of topics, there's really not much information about them. So you can become an expert on the leading edge fairly quickly. If it's something like overall genetics or, you know, gut health, there's a lot more, you know, steps to go through. But once you get into these nuanced genetic topics like this, there's not that much information out there. And like with my education, I could kind of, you know, get through that very quickly, conceptualize it, and then start drawing those dots of what nutrients, what are they missing? You know, what's the next step here? What links haven't they connected yet? Because once you get a big picture of how these mechanisms work, then you start drawing like dots. I'll do like a whiteboard thing, and then I'll be like a big question mark. But how does this do this? And then I Google, I look on PubMed. There's no studies showing that. But like with all the other evidence, the only way this could work, this whole process, is if this did that, but no one's tested it yet. Well, what do you know? This thing that no one's tested yet uses, I don't know, throwing out an example, zinc as a cofactor, let's say. So then if they have this weird ailment, maybe zinc could help for them. And that's kind of how I develop these types of things that I haven't heard other people talking about.
Well, that's kind of the real scientific process though, isn't it? You know, like continually searching for that answer and continually kind of proving science itself wrong, you know?
But that's also what, that's the benefit of a PhD versus med school, like MD, DO, even naturopath, honestly. That's more so, here's the information we have, take it and use it. But a PhD, above all else, it's training you to critically think, because I had to literally prove something no one else has proved before in order to graduate. I literally had to be like, all right, figure it out. Like, I don't know how to inject mice with cancer. I don't know how to dissect tumors. I don't know how to digest tumors and get live cells and label them and image them. I had to trial and error, figure it all out and prove something no one else has proved before. So it's the mindset of a PhD. And this is not, you know, a diss that no one without a PhD can have this type of thinking. You know, I must say, being in the holistic space, I met so many people with such stellar critical thinking. They ask amazing questions and they don't have that formal education, you know? So education just educates you information. It puts information in your brain. The ability to ask these questions and connect these topics, that's much, much harder to train. And like I said, a lot of these people in the holistic space, they just connect these dots without the underlying genetics, and we'll agree about something. They'll post something and I'll be like, oh wow, like I've never seen someone, you know, make the nuanced stuff with these supplements. And then I'll ask them, like, did you know that these supplements do this? They're like, no, I didn't know the pharmacology at all. I just through trial and error realized that these are good for sensitive people. But from my end, I know everything you just listed will affect adrenaline levels. It blocks this enzyme, it blocks that enzyme. So it's just so interesting seeing similar minds come to the same conclusion from radically different backgrounds and educations. And that when you converge on that, that just proves even further that that is the truth.
Yeah. And I feel like I was doing the same thing watching your page with a lot of it. And it's like, that's what I think the nice thing about like everything that you have, it's like, okay, you have something to like really, really back up like the specific, not pathology, but the path of everything that's
everything happens happening. For a reason, you know? And exactly. I'm like, I'm a big molecular, it's like a puzzle to me, knowing that this does this, which binds that and makes this. And it's just all very, very predictable. And if you have too little of this, you're going to have all these other things that are messed up, and that could lead to these symptoms. And what do you know? You have these symptoms.
And did you have a moment where it's like, because it's like, I know that but traditionally I'm thinking about when I was in college, most of the people that were going out to go get their PhDs were kind of a certain type of people. It's like,
yeah,
they liked being in school. They were pretty like teacher pet, like they're going to follow everything to a T. And then that's what made them excel at these things. Like they're really good at in the system, and that's why they like being in the system. And that's not a fault on anything there. What's
going on?
Was that me or you?
What
did you hear that voice? I don't know if that dog cam or something like that. There's something maybe. Making noise here. What the
fuck? Maybe, might have been my pen that I'm fidgeting. Maybe.
Oh, no, possibly. No. Somebody said a voice. I have this dog camera, but I didn't know it was set up, and somebody just yelled at something.
Was that really a microdose this morning?
Well, my roommates have their dogs over there, so I wonder if they're yelling at them through their dog camera. I was like, what the fuck? Sorry.
What were you saying about
the PhD?
Yeah, and that's the thing I realized too. You know, it's not a knock to anybody, different personality types, but yeah, like most of my peers were very, you know, head in the books and like, trying to think how to word this. I don't mean to offend anybody. You know, nothing bad, right or wrong, different types of people, but very just head is so focused on their exact project right there, but they're also lacking the big picture about drawing these types of things. But Yeah, I definitely didn't fit the normal personality type for a PhD by any means.
Well, and that was my question. Like, how did you, especially surrounded by all of it, like, did you have an awakening moment to where, like, you're like, I need to see, because I had this where I was like going through all of my field and I was like so stuck, like you said, like just what's right in front of me and like pretty stuck in the, let's say stuck in the system, stuck in the book, whatever it was. And like, this was safe. This was my answer to everything. And then there was like this kind of aha moment, like, oh shit, like there's so much more out. And then everything kind of went from there. How did you, surrounded by all of the like stuck in the book stuff and kind of going through that PhD route where it's a certain type of personality, like how did you break out of that? Did you have an aha moment or was it kind of just
the personality? Yeah, no, so I definitely did. So like the first probably 3 semesters or so of my PhD, I was honestly just like a glorified frat boy. Like I really didn't take it that seriously. I came right out of undergrad. I shotgun and funneled way too many beers. Like I was like undefeated in 3 states and I wore that as a badge of honor, you know, like so good at drinking this neurotoxin. It's just so funny. People from high school and college are just like, wait, you don't really drink it. Like, it seems so weird because that's the type of person that I was. I didn't really take it that seriously at all. And it was kind of just going through the motions. And I remember during the qualifying exam, so you had to basically write a mock grant that was cross-examined by the faculty at the university. You had to give a speech about it. And they basically had to like, you had a research proposal and act as if you're going to do the research. And that'd be a field that you weren't studying for your PhD. I did mine on endocannabinoid signaling with renal cancers. So how THC cannabis can be used to treat certain types of renal cancers. And I remember I was studying all day and trying to like have these ideas and stuff. And honestly, I distinctly remember I was trying to lower my caffeine tolerance. And I read that NMDA antagonists, magnesium is actually one of them. That's how it could help with stimulant tolerances, can reverse stimulant tolerances. So I read that memantine, this anti-Alzheimer's drug, people actually take to help revitalize their like stimulant tolerances. So I got some and tried it, and it's not something you like instantly like feel. It's a long half-life, and it's the similar mechanism as magnesium, as ketamine. You can get dissociation effects at high doses. And I had really bad anxiety leading up to that, like waking up so panicked, super bad imposter syndrome. Because again, I was this frat boy, and all these other people either had a master's already, master's plus work, 2 years of med school. Like I was definitely by far the, I guess, least with it out of all these people. It took me so much longer to read the papers. I'm like, what is going on? I'm never going to get this stuff. And I took the memantine, I think the day before that day. And then I remember after I was all done, I smoked some weed. And then I remember I didn't feel the memantine in the moment, but once I smoked, it was a interesting type of high because it was still in my system. It interacted. And that's the first time that I realized that you have things. First time I really viewed molecular biology for what it was, and that you have these things that bind receptors, and there's all these pathways and instructions in the cells. And I still have the picture on my Snapchat, I think. It's literally like I drew this huge whiteboard of the cell with all these pathways. And I was literally like borderline manic, just like, oh my God, I figured it out. If you understand the molecular pathways, you can understand this. And literally just like was up. I was going to get ready to go to bed. I ended up having like some more caffeine and just going. And literally just mapped all of this out and had all these crazy ideas and stuff. And then after that moment, that was when things really, really changed for me. I started taking it actually seriously. And I'm like, I went to them with these ideas I had. And I remember they were just like, Tyler, this is like 3 grants worth of work. Like all the ideas in one night, all these ideas I came once that switch hit and my mind shifted, a huge paradigm shift for me. And then after that moment too, my really bad crippling anxiety was I'd break down adrenaline slow. So I'm always prone to stress. But that daily anxiety was completely gone. Mm. And like, get this. So I found out, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago. I mean, what I'm talking about now is probably like 6 years ago, something like that. But get this. So what do you know? Memantine, similar mechanism to ketamine as magnesium, which both raise BDNF. So I think part of the reason why I felt so much better, my anxiety went away, is because my BDNF was low from all the chronic stress. I wasn't taking magnesium. I wasn't taking CBD. And I took memantine, which raises BDNF and made me feel much more confident in myself, in my thoughts, and not be second guessing myself. So it's like, that was another thing looking back years after the fact, going back, wow, I was actually taking, and I'm not endorsing, guys, do not go and get memantine. You know, I'm not suggesting that to anybody by any means. This was just how my brain works. I thoroughly researched it, and it wasn't like a, you know, taking every day type of thing. But that for me, I don't think I ever talked about this before, like publicly, but that was definitely the big aha moment for me.
That's so fucking awesome. One thing I want to talk to you about is you for sure enter these massive flow states. You said that you felt like it was like this manic state. And I
call it the Avatar state. You ever see Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yep.
Yeah, you know when it, like, he goes to his ancestors, the eyes glow white and stuff? Like, yep. It's like that. And honestly, like, I'm really big in electronic music and DJing. And like, I feel that similar state, the flow state, you know, no matter what. It's all about creative endeavors. It doesn't matter what medium that's through. Once you enter that flow state, that avatar state, that's where true miracles happen.
And I 100% agree. And then this is something that I've been like trying to captivate with people. It's like when I do a lot of writing, people like ask like how you write, how you do it. And it's like talking about this flow state. You kind of just enter something and like the words kind of just pop up in your head. The ideas kind of just pop up in your head. And it's literally like that whiteboard thing, like where you said, it's like you almost can't get these words and ideas out fast enough. It's kind of just, you have to get it all
absolutely
out. Have you found a way for yourself with all of these methods to get yourself into that flow state, not at will, but like to enter that flow state more often?
And yeah, real quick, I'm going to show you. I found the picture.
Hell yeah. Let's see this.
January 8th, 2017. Let's see if you can see it.
Yes,
it was like all this, and this was just part of it that I got, and then like ended up doing more. I forgot to take the picture before, but this is literally the culmination of me scouring papers. This is probably the culmination of like 50 plus papers, really understanding which binds to what can inhibit what, and mapping it all out like this on my own. So wow, memories. So you were asking about the flow state. I mean, I think one of the main things is limiting external stressors. I'm very prone to other people's energies. Very prone to just, I guess, hustle and bustle, and like, I know me personally, like in the context of DJing, like if I'm doing it at a huge party with a bunch of people there all talking this and that, that's hard for me to really do my best work, where I'm layering all these different sounds and mixing based on key and all these different things, versus doing it with, you know, three or four of my really close friends at my house, just whatever, and everyone's all dialed in. You're not thinking about anything external versus, I mean, that can be the context for anything. Instead of DJing, if you're trying to do work at a library, you know, if you have all these people in your peripherals walking past you that you don't know, like subconsciously, that's going to be affecting you. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get in the flow state unless you're completely in your own bubble. But I do think that it absolutely helps. And again, kind of going back to learning movement patterns, making sure that inflammation's low. Like if I have a plan to really learn something or try to, you know, push the boundaries, come up with some new ideas, and I would never plan to do that. Like those meals I have leading up to that have to be to the fucking T. Like I need to make sure I slept well. If I don't sleep well, or I'm up too late the night before, I'll just cancel the plans and I'll push it back, because I'm one of those people, I need my 8 hours of sleep. It needs to be good sleep. And when I don't get it, like there's a big dip to my overall productivity. So making sure the meals, like I would never eat out any meal I don't normally eat every day, the two meals prior, honestly, all the meals that day leading up to whenever I'm going to go and sit down and do that thing.
Oh, and one of the things that kind of got my brain rolling with too, it's like that whiteboard that you just showed me, it's like, you talked about, it's like 50, all these 50 papers that you had read and everything like that. It's like, well, the big thing, it's like, it's almost being the good doctor and preparing yourself for when that flow state and that exponential growth can come. Cause I feel like a lot of people, it's just like, well, everything just comes. It's like, kind of, but you also prepare yourself with all this information. And this is how I kind of think about, like, I try to expose myself to as many different ideas, and maybe it's even music or books or just thoughts, and I try to expose myself to as many different things. And a lot of times it doesn't even make sense in the moment, but I know when that flow state hits, I have all these things coming over. And whenever I hit into a flow state, it's almost like I prepared myself for that flow state to go somewhere. And then when that flow state comes, it's like, just like that whiteboard, it's like these 17 ideas that you've had all connected, but it's almost like the magic is in that flow state, but there's also magic in almost preparing yourself for that flow state and not
100%
just waiting around for it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, man, you're spot on so many fronts. I could tell our brains are very similar. And yeah, there's that. And then what you mentioned before about not being able to get these ideas out quick enough. Like, I almost wish I had like a translator where I could just say it and they transcribe it, you know, and onto the next thing. Because these ideas will come and go very, very quickly. Yeah, the preparation is huge, especially when, and this isn't talking about just trying to learn something from a PowerPoint, you know, this is trying to connect dots that, at least from the knowledge that we have, that we'd experienced, that the content we've ingested, consumed, no one's made these connections before. You know, could maybe someone on planet Earth ever has and we haven't heard it yet? Of course, but like from our perspective, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just learning a PowerPoint module and understanding that, it's going one level beyond and connecting these things and not giving a crap about, you know, what strictly following the science and the data and your own intuition that is also heavily based on the science and data. Because once again, there's no rubric for me to go off of with this. There's no rule book or like, you know, workflow of like this symptom, give this test, give this drug, you know, it's all just ebbing and flowing and evolving.
And one of the things that I heard, I saw that you mentioned, and I thought this was really, really cool, is it's like you have a theory or a thought process behind like the spirituality or like the musician, the creative aspect of people you feel like might be like this genetic mutation that has people be more prone to it, more in depth to it. Like, you talk about that you're a DJ. Like, I knew that you were going to be some sort of musician somewhere along those lines, just based off your career.
I did art growing up too. I was very artistic. Well, I still am. It's one of those things. I want to get back into it. I want to pick up my guitar again soon. But like right now, I'm just trying to just build what I have right now. But like, hopefully play my cards right. I don't know how many years from now it could kind of be like, I don't know, semi-retire. I don't know. No, sorry, not semi-retire. Not just be working all the fucking time, but like, I love doing what I do. You know, I love doing the work, but yeah. Yeah. So I was doing the art too, all that stuff. I think it all coincides together. And it's funny looking back, just being like, I don't know what I'm going to end up doing after the PhD. And then it's just being a very anxious person. Like, what if this doesn't work out? And then thus far, like, I don't know if you ever saw this meme that it was these people that had heads like Rubik's cubes. And the Rubik's cubes were like all messed up. And it's like being so worried that like you're not going to figure it out. And then it was like an older version of that person with the Rubik's cube solved. And it's like you'll look back and realize that like you were going to figure it out all along. And like now, I would say the past year or so, probably the last 6 months or so. Once after the first few months, first couple dozen clients started working, after all this decade of just work, learn, and like figuring out, trying so many things. Like, I'm sure you've heard, like, the masters failed far more times than the beginner even has tried. You know what I mean? Like, I failed at so many different things. So many things didn't work out. I remember I was like reaching out to like big pharma lawyers to see if I wanted to do that as a living. And like, in hindsight, of course, fucking not. But like, you never know what they may say, you know? So always keep opening those doors. Each door, keep investigating. And it's just about doing the volume of work over time. You know, I put in an immense amount of volume of work over the past 10, 12 years in order to get to this point now, where finally now I feel like I'm really honing in on my mission and having this clear path to the Ikagi. You know what the Ikagi is?
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can monetize, I think, right? Yep, those three. Yep. Yeah. Is there a fourth one or no? Just the three.
The circle that I know of is those three.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of found that, and I realized whenever I'm feeling down, you know, which happens more often than you think, everyone's human, you know, I try to remind myself that relative to all the people out there, a relatively small percentage of the population really gets to find that Ikagi. And I don't think that's because there's not an Ikagi for that person. I just think most people are trapped being neuroinflamed on these pharmaceutical medications, you know, eating grains like the food pyramid says, and avoiding these meats, avoiding the animal fats. And that's what's holding a lot of the people back. And, you know, we could go down the whole rabbit hole of, you know, why do they want us to be like that? But I think, you know, any probably most people listening to this podcast, you know, are already on that wave, you know, but yeah.
100%. And then so that wave is probably where we can start to end this podcast, because that you talked about, you want to do that group, the group talk, and you talked about how like 60% of the people that you view kind of have these same issues. And then you went on the rant about like how like a lot of things that are holding people back from reaching that kind of point in their life in which they're having all these things kind of come together. And once you're able to get your brain to a point and like working in the same direction, it kind of, it's like this inner piece of like, oh, this is kind of what it's supposed, like that Rubik's cube, like filled it, figured out in your head. And not that life is figured out or that you're content or anything, but it's just like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And you see it, you see so many people blocked by some of these things. And maybe it's some of the genetics, maybe it's some of it's what they're taking. A lot of it's their diet, but there's so many pieces that go into it. If you were to do these group talks and you just talk to the mass population where 60% are struggling with this, what are like some general things? Because I'm thinking like magnesium. Magnesium is something that of like with athletes that we're talking with, it's almost like 100% hit rate to where like they take it and they instantly feel better, sleep better, feel amazing. Like what are some of the things like that are like pretty, like if you start doing this, it's probably going to lead to a benefit in your life.
Yeah. I mean, I think magnesium is definitely one of them. I think vitamin D and melatonin are two of the most overly demonized supplements out there. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D, if you're not getting, like if it's not summertime, you're going to be deficient in vitamin D. There's no way around it. So I always recommend people supplement with that. You want to make sure there's vitamin K2 with it. Magnesium's also a cofactor. And boron's also a cofactor. So usually like taking those together. Melatonin really changed my life. I have mutations. I don't secrete as much melatonin at nighttime. And I also, my cells aren't as sensitive to melatonin. I have mutations of the melatonin receptor. And a lot of people have these mutations. And a lot of people are told that it messes up your own melatonin secretion, proven not to be true. Really good anti-aging, longevity, antioxidant. Melatonin makes your body make more glutathione, the master antioxidant. There's that. And then one thing I always tell people too is go get food allergy testing, not the blood IgG food sensitivity test. Those are heavily influenced by how often you eat the foods, but a skin prick test, I've told you that I got that done. I realized I'm severely allergic to foods and animals I'm exposed to every single day. Yeah. They drip little drops of allergens on your arm, do a little scrape and see what literally swells up. So rather than measuring one isolated antibody, you know, in a vacuum, oh, this is high, so you're sensitive to it. What's literally going to make my skin swell up? So, you know, that can result in nothing for some people. But for some other people, they're like, oh, I'm allergic to cashews and I have them and I didn't think that'd be an issue. But people think allergies are only anaphylaxis, coughing, sneezing. Virtually every inflammatory thing from the skin, hives, psoriasis, eczema, the brain, anxiety, depression, brain fog, OCD, joints, joint pain, arthritis, gut stuff, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, IBS, all of these things, you type in any of those ailments and histamine, you will find a shit ton of papers that all are directly linking it to higher levels of histamine. So it just depends on where it manifests for certain people. Now, I don't want everyone to think that everyone's histamine intolerant. That's not necessarily true, but if you don't have genetic mutations that make you histamine intolerant, bad gut bacteria, gut dysbiosis, bad bacteria can produce histamine in your gut. So based on the normal American diet, gut dysbiosis is pretty much a certain. So trying something that trying to eat some lower histamine foods for a little bit to see how you feel. Those are some other ones. I'm trying to think of any other ones off the top of my head. I think one that a lot of people have too are nitric oxide mutations. So don't get as much blood flow. If your fingers and toes are cold all the time, that means you probably have poor nitric oxide support. That could lead to histamine intolerance. It leads to lower glutathione. It can lead to premature aging. I personally love agatine sulfate as a nitric oxide booster. And a lot of clients I work with that have these super cold fingers and toes, they take that and they're like, holy shit, I can actually feel my fingers and toes again. So over the years, that low nitric oxide, what could that possibly lead to?
Boom. And go work with you, correct?
Yeah. Anyone that's interested in learning more, you could follow my page at dr.tylerpanzner, P-A-N-Z-N-E-R. My website is drno.tylerpanzner, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm definitely planning on doing more posting about, I guess, my original, like a lot of my stuff right now is just like podcast stuff and snippets, but I definitely want to be doing more original content, YouTube, some long form content, and really start educating, you know. I think everyone also knows someone that isn't feeling too great, especially if they're tired of the normal paradigm, or if you're tired of wasting money on these supplements and not getting anything out of it, please feel free to reach out. Literally what I do for a living, and it's really just changing lives left and right.
So before we go, do you want to tell people, if they do work with you, what kind of that process will look like?
Yeah, definitely. So as of right now, basically order the DNA kit to your door. Usually comes there in a day or two if you're in the US, but I do work globally. So these kits ship pretty much everywhere in the world. I think India is one of the most common countries it doesn't ship to. But other than that, you know, Australia, Canada, Spain, everywhere I can order it globally. Goes to your door, send in the saliva sample. Takes 4 to 6 weeks usually for the data to come in. And then I take that existing data. So I use a platform called Self-Decode. It's like 23andMe, but way more advanced, utilizing artificial intelligence. And I'll take that information, which absolutely can help your life as is, but I go one step further and figure out exactly what you need. Because a lot of recommendations, whether it's some of these other genetic coaches or maybe non-genetic expert health coaches, or they'll look at some data and say, for this one mutation, take this. Well, there's three other mutations they didn't consider that can make it a net negative for you. So it's not just saying what your cells need. It's what your cells should not be having. What supplements? A lot of supplements people take are actually making them worse. A lot of them can affect adrenaline levels. People will say, yeah, I started working with a gastroenterologist or whatever, this or that, 8 months ago. And I've been so anxious lately. I'm like, oh, how long have you been anxious? Oh, about 8 months ago. I'm like, oh, well, probably because the supplements you're taking are jacking up your adrenaline. And that's why you can't sleep at night. So really figuring out a blueprint, what stuff makes sense, what stuff doesn't make sense. And then we have a 75-minute Zoom call. We're going over all of that, breaking it down for you. And as of right now, I can get additional follow-ups. But in the near future, in the next month or so, I really plan on offering multiple different types of more supportive type things, you know, whether it's like a group thing. I 100% plan on doing courses and just getting that information out there. I really think so many people are utilizing supplements the wrong way, or taking supplements that interact with their medication, causing further issues. And I really haven't heard anyone, whether it's conventional medicine or holistic medicine, talk about this, because no one's as hyper-focused, detail-oriented pharmacologist like I am, at least that I've met. You know, it's that super attention to detail. Everything matters. That's kind of what anxiety makes you think. Everything matters. And that same negative turns into a positive when I'm looking at these minute molecular mechanisms of these things and drawing these conclusions.
Boom. Keeping an N of one. This was awesome, Tyler. This lived up to the hype. Thank you for being on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, my man.
Thank you guys for listening. Keep chopping wood.
Thank you for listening. Join us next week as we dive down another rabbit hole. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star rating. Follow us on Instagram at Austin Yoakum to stay updated on future podcast guests. Keep chopping wood.